No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, filth. But I burst out laughing watching him.
So it's just me and you today, Paddy. Connell had to pull out last night. He had a thing in work, and I'm very surprised because, like, he obviously predicted the Dubs to beat Galway, which none of us did. And there's a kind of a saying about a stop clock being right when once a day. Is that right, Paddy?
Twice a day, I think. Twice. The 24-hour clock.
And a night, yeah. Night time too, yeah.
But, yeah, no, I thought he'd be here to saw it into us, especially... Yeah, being from Tip now, at least we can actually give Tip some bit of praise now after the Clare win. But I think if Conn was here, we'd be in trouble.
Yeah, we definitely would. We'll talk about Tip in a while because Tip have been completely overshadowed by the whole controversy around the penalty. But I want to give a huge shout out to Kildare under-20s. Paddy beat Wexford the other night. Now, anybody listening would probably have seen this by now. Like, I mean, it's incredible considering Wexford were minor champions in 2019. This was no weak Wexford team. Mm-hmm. And Kildare were leading the whole way through. And they went down to 13 men. Wexford got a penalty in injury time and then got a point to go a point up. Now, surely Kildare are going to drop their heads then and say, it's not our day.
Oh, that's exactly what you would think. And that's what usually happens, you know, when the underdog, they're all the way through, they're nosing ahead and doing everything they can. And then if the favourite gets on top at all, especially at underage level, like, these are kids, like, essentially. And you're asking them to have the experience to have that mental strength. So I think that's unbelievable. Probably a lot goes down to management as well. Like, they must have a very, very good kind of, you know, pillar there in place with their mental strength. So that was unbelievable to come back and unbelievable free at the end. Like, that is class. But no one giving out about how far the slitter travelled for that one.
No, and it was a free. It was Liam Dempsey, but then he got the winner from play, which was an incredible point off his left-hand side just under the stand. So it was fantastic stuff. And apparently I was reading 12 of that team are underage next year. So maybe Kildare are coming with a really good underage team, you know, and they can maybe make that kind of step into the Joe McDonagh and further up. Again, then they're minors. I was all about Go Kildare, and I even set up the Lilies on Twitter. I nearly had to, you know, have a shower after doing it. And then they're minors. I was on the kind of Lily bandwagon, and then they're minors beat our minors last night, and I'm back to normal kind of thinking now.
Yeah, when it hits your own front door, you're not as chirpy about it. But yeah, look, hey, it's unbelievable signs. But I suppose if you were listening, I think David Herty's over him. Like, if you're listening there for the last couple of years, it's going well at senior level. They're competing really well, and that is important. Okay, you do get the underage structures right, but they still have to kind of look up to somebody at the senior ranks and say, geez, there's something to get there. If you think about Anthony Daly going in and what he gave to Dublin seniors, and he put them at the top table, I think then you really get young as and say, hey, hold on, I can actually compete at the top. I can be playing against, you know, the Limericks of this world, the Corks of this world. And, like, what a shot in the arm that is for Kildare hurling. And you do need, if you want to make a difference at senior level, you do need a little crop. And you need that special group to come along and at least get you up there and hold you there for a little while at the top. And then you'd be hoping the minors, after beating Leash, maybe they'll come up and join them.
Yeah, exactly. Kildare are in the Joe McDonagh Cup, of course. We've Tommy Doyle coming up in part two. They're playing Westmead this weekend. So the next step for Kildare is to get into the Leinster Championship. And maybe with these young lads, they might be able to do that. Disappointing with the Leash Minors, actually. Derek McGrath has been training them for the last 2 years. And they got hammered last year by a really fancy team, Leash were. They got hammered by Offaly, which was a huge disappointment. And now they've lost against Kildare. So I don't really know what to think about that. The referees are meeting today, Paddy, and they're in agreement that James Owens was wrong, and it's not going to come as any kind of surprise. They're going to review the different incidents for the penalties, which was Caelum Lyons on, and which was, sorry, Shane Fives foul on Aaron Shanahar, and it was Peter Casey on Conor Cahillane, and then it was the obvious one of McCarthy on Morris then in Thurles. Like, I mean,
no, on Murphy's one as well, even though that wasn't.
Yeah, well, that's the one that's the one that's not controversial or anything like that. So, like, I mean, we know it was wrong. There's probably not too much to say about it, Paddy, other than the fact it's completely overshadowed, you know, a Tipperary win. Tipperary, good chance they would have won anyway, but now, you know, everybody's saying, you know, Clare were robbed and it was a complete injustice.
Well, They might, Tip might have won. I'm not one of the ones to say, Tip were going well anyway, they were going to win. I do think Tip were slightly the better team in the first half and unlucky to go in, whatever it was, a pint down or 2 points down. But at the time, they were down 2 points. Maybe they would have got a free for a score if that wasn't given a penalty. But by the end of the men, and the biggest thing was getting the player sin-binned. Like, yeah. That was 10 minutes. By the time they came back, that was an 8-point swing. So they lost by 4 at the end. Now, look, the game could have gone anyway. You know, Tip were kind of a little bit in kind of, you know, free flow in near the end after the second water break. The game was, I'd say they felt the game was over.
The game was over, closer. Yeah.
But they were kind of just, you know, keeping them out, trying to. But I don't know. Tip looked okay to me. They look good. It's good that they're under the radar. They came into it under the radar, and thankfully they stayed that way. But the incident for the penalty, like, the only thing I want to say is the rule itself. I told you at the start when this came in, you're giving the referees too much to do.
Yeah.
Asking them to read the play, they're not a hurler for a reason. They're not brilliant at reading the play. Most of them, some of them are excellent at it. I even say our own lad, Fergal Horgan, is very good, but he's played at a high level. They're not brilliant. So he felt that was a goal-scoring opportunity when it's very, very obvious it wasn't yet a goal-scoring opportunity. But I would say they needed to change it. It should be any cynical foul when you're bearing that. If you're attacking the goals, doesn't matter if there's a last man back, doesn't matter if there's a goal-scoring opportunity. If you're attacking the goals and you're on your way and somebody fouls you cynically, that should be whatever, a penalty or whatever punishment you want, that should be for me. And that's where they've gone wrong with it. They've made too many little loopholes in it and, of course, made a mess of it again.
Well, Cathalan was bearing down on goals now. Would you have had Casey, or does it have to be a very obvious one? Like, I mean, for me, Casey just kind of ran across him there. I wouldn't have said that was one. It has to be, basically, if you combine the McCarthy foul with the Casey, you know, position on the pitch, there you go.
Baby. And even being honest to you, McCarthy, I mean, he dived in with his hurley, got right, okay.
He still took him out, yeah.
No problem, but had you a 5% chance of flicking the ball away? I've done it in the past. I've gone in and said, I have a 2% chance of getting the ball, but if I don't, he's going to be stopped. So yeah. At the end of the day, he had a chance of getting the ball. You know, this is for all the clear people that think I'm biased. He had a chance of getting the ball.
Yeah, but you have to be careful. It's like a penalty in soccer. You have a chance to get the ball, but if you don't get it, you take him down. Do you get me? You know, like, I mean,
I do get you.
You have to be careful.
100. Well, that's true, and it's careless use of the hurley is what they call it. But how many times have you seen a guy die? I've done it plenty of times. Last ditch tackle in and barely get a scrape on the ball and flick it away. So. That's the only grey area for me.
Yeah.
What you would call a cynical foul. But attacking the goals, I actually think it should be, that should be the punishment. That if you did call that a cynical foul, then the rule should be that kind of thing would be a penalty because you're stopping the danger at all, you know.
Yeah, it's weird that they've broadened it right out to the sideline anyways. Like, I mean, there's no one scoring from there. That's a bit silly. Now, it's not easy, really, you know, it's unless to put another line on the field halfway down there, you know, that would be messy and silly. Barry Kelly was in the Independent saying it wasn't trialled for long enough. And that's a fair point. It was trialled in the league. And the league, as we know now, when you compare it to the Championship, like, we did say it at the time, Paddy, it's water for crystal stuff. Like, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, shadow boxing, isn't it? Like, so if you're talking about breaking tackles and hunting and packs, we were saying, is hunting and packs gone? I thought it was. I was having nightmares. But obviously, we saw it was back over the weekend. So now the incidents of breaking through on goal are way, way up. And sure, how many have we had in 2 weekends? We had 3 or 4 incidents like this. And it is consternation now.
Yeah, no, definitely. Liam Sheedy said after the game, he said, in fairness, I think we have good defenders. Overall, I thought we managed the game well and we structured ourselves well at time. What structure is he talking about? A defensive structure?
Yeah, well, I think he wants throughout his team. Like, I've talked about this before and I wouldn't hide it. Like, I know one of the flaws with the Tip team. I know Liam has said it isn't. But, like, we wouldn't be the fastest team, I don't think. Like, if you think about when I used to play, thankfully we had Garrod, Ryan, we had Lara Corbin, we had Bonner Maher in the forward line. Were good to chase around the Shane McGrath, James Woodlock midfield.
Yeah.
Two more speed merchants. Of course, I was in the back, so you had all your speed covered there. So you had an awful lot of fast lads, right? But that probably isn't there and hasn't been replaced, which is fine. That's the way it is. So they have to be well structured, because the powers of recovery, if we get opened just from a simple puck out, I think our powers of recovery just aren't as good as other teams. It's fine. So like you could see, we played two on their puck outs, we played two inside, and so they had men out the field. So you saw the full back line get an awful lot of ball. And I'd say it was thinking for the most part, they weren't opened up from that position. There wasn't too many runners through the middle. So look, there is a bit to work on, because a couple of times that broke down and malfunctioned. But I'd say overall, you know, Clare weren't running rings around him. So I think that's the object. And you probably feel they have the good hurlers, if they can keep it tight to affect the game then and get the ball back.
Is that with Limerick in mind, really, to let the full back line get it and make the pitch further out smaller? So the full back line will carry it forward, but there's no, you know, there's a lot less space then when they actually want to give a pass. Is Liam Sheedy become kind of obsessed with how to, I won't say obsessed, but obviously they've taken two spankings against Limerick, which would really annoy Liam Sheedy.
Yeah, you could say Limerick, like, because Limerick are obviously the top team, but I reckon you could talk about Cork in that situation. You could talk about a Wexford in that situation, a Waterford in that situation. That if we follow if Tip follow those teams up the pitch and a good intricate ball is put into space, then we're in trouble. Like, I've seen it, because Cork did it in the Munster Championship a number of times with Lahan and Horgan and Cadogan, and you know, Tip were badly exposed. So you have to learn from that. And I think it's a classic case of, these are my best players. Okay, I haven't been able to develop the All Ireland winners under 20 in minor, so I need to play a structure that suits my players. And I think, you know, I think that's the long and the short of it. And I think, look, it was good the other day, but we'll see, is it good enough the next day?
Yeah. What's with all the wides, Paddy? So, like, I mean, Clare had 22 against Waterford. Limerick had 20 against Cork. I think there was 35 in total. Kieran Kingston said Cork missed 118. Galway had 11 in the first half against Dublin. These are the elite teams. You know, like, I mean, why do you think that is? Is this just, like, they had 5 games warm up in the league. That should have their eye in, right?
Yeah, well, look, you know, have they all in common? It was their first match of the year, wasn't it?
Right. First championship
first match of the year. Yeah, but come here. That was they're different sports. If you look at it now, it's like a different sport. And add into that now, I suppose, another thing I was talking about somebody the other day. It was the first time a lot of them had played with a crowd, a proper crowd, in a long, long time. And so if you think about the intensity, and this is why I talk about hurling's a little bit different to other sports. And I don't mean that in the snobby way. It's just like the factual way of that. The fine motor skills involved. It's like golf and soccer. If you were hitting a golf ball and you got it marginally wrong, flies away or it spins away. If you hit a soccer ball wrong, it'll probably go in more or less the same direction it should have. So hurling is the same way. You're running at whatever speed. You have to clip the ball on the right spot for it to go over the bar with a crowd roaring and a lad breathing down your neck and knowing the importance of championship. And it's like a central nervous system reaction, and your timing is just a little bit off. It's like ring rust in boxing. Your timing is just a little bit off. And look at the three or four teams that had the wides. It was all their weekend. Now, Tip were probably the only team without that issue this weekend. I don't think they had too many wides, but I think a lot of the Tip players are picked with their, you know, that's their speciality, I'll say.
Yeah. Speaking of the crowds, if any game needs crowds, hurling needs crowds, don't they? Like, I mean, the games were a completely different ball game. You know, the physicality was cheered. You know, you saw it a lot more. Maybe there was a lot more, but I noticed it a lot. I noticed the hits. I noticed the tackles. Just from the crowd. I even noticed the numbers on the show from Monday having gone up, because people are going to games and now they want to listen about it. It's a different ball game, isn't it?
It is. It's the ebb and flow. And that's why we don't like the water breaks either, though, because the drama just goes up and down and up and down in a championship hurling match. And the crowd really gets involved, whether it's a bad decision. And you see what the crowd were like at halftime towards the ref after the match to James Owens. They're just up and down. And as you say, everything gets cheered. And also, like, just say I take a sharp puck out or I get a ball with my back facing the rest of the play in hurling, like, you can't relax, because in the other sports, in football, you have it. I mean, he has to do an awful lot to take the ball off of your opponent. But in hurling, there could be two lads coming to me, there could be three lads coming to me. I actually don't know. So therefore, we see an awful lot more mistakes. And of course, that brings with it that added drama. So yeah, hopefully now it would be great to keep even small crowds coming. Like, I was at the match Sunday, and atmosphere, I didn't know, you know, there was only a few thousand out, but there could have been 10,000, 15,000 for all I know.
Yeah, even the 8,000. I remember watching National League finals and there's 20,000 in Croke Park and you're like, this is a waste of time. It shouldn't be in Croke Park. It should go to a regional ground instead of this waste of time. And then there's 8,000 in Croke Park and it sounded like it was full. It was unbelievable.
How we
bloody shame. But Sean Flynn had a piece in The Examiner and he's talking about all these wides and all these shots. So shots per match have gone off the charts. This was after the first weekend of hurling. There was 94 shots per match in the Leinster Championship. And Clare versus Waterford Munster, there was 84 shots. Now, in the 94 shots in the Leinster Championship, it was two one-sided games, Dublin, Antrim and Laois and Wexford. But just as a way of comparison, in the drawn All-Ireland final between Clare and Cork, which was an unbelievable game, the same as the first one. First one was probably better. It was really open, free-flowing game. There was 69 shots in that. You know, like, I mean, so you're talking about a huge, almost a 50% increase in that. Now, he's making the point that teams could be shooting tactically, right? So if you score, it's great from the shot. If not, we have a chance on the puck out, right? So he has details here. In 2020, Limerick scored 138 off the opposition's puck out and they scored 228 off their own puck out. They're scoring more off the opposition's puck out than they are off their own. So why not just take a shot? If it goes over, that's great. If not, let's nail it. Now, Sean, like, did Statsman with Tipperary before. Like, is he overthinking this theory or is the increased shots just kind of, you know, a result of teams dropping off and all those other things we've talked about on the show?
Yeah, I would think it's more of a result. Now, there's a couple of factors in it. You shoot from where you have space in hurling or in any field sport. You rarely get your score when you're under a lot of pressure. So where's their least bodies now? It seems like you're on 65-metre line. So you're looking up. The other team are sitting back into the pockets of space that your full forward line are in. So am I going to try and pop it into that small window of space? Or I'm actually on my own here. This ball will travel and I'm going to take a pot shot. And obviously the sensible thing is we're well set up going back the way it ends. So I think that's an awful lot of it. If teams weren't sitting back as much, I think you'd see guys winning the ball around the middle of the field under pressure around the middle of the field and then getting the ball into their full forward line where they know the damage is done. So I think that's it. Also, I think the other thing is if you're in a forward line and maybe you have the ball and you're running out towards the sideline, if we think of Dan Morrissey or Grod Hegarty, we often see them winning the ball and spinning out to the sideline. Well, there's probably not a lot of options on if there's guys trailing them. And I think the whole thing is, right, I'm accurate. I may as well have a pop here because there's nothing really on. If I turn back, I might be turning back into three opponents, three Cork guys. So I think they have the mindset of, yeah, I'm fairly accurate. If it goes over, great. If it doesn't go over, it's gone wide. But we're such animals on the puck out that we think we've a better chance of actually winning back that ball. And if I try to play three or four intricate passes, or heaven forbid, you're turned over in your own forward line, and then you're very, very open going back to the other end of the pitch.
I think that obviously what Limerick have scored off the opposition's puckouts is a reflection on how they're able to mark. Their half forward line drops towards midfield, or midfield drops towards that. Like, and then you have the opposition puckout. I've spoken about this on the football show, and I'm completely against short puckouts or short kickouts when there's a press on. Because it's too risky and you're just giving it to a fella under pressure and now he's to work it out the field. And if it goes wrong, there's a good chance that, you know, it's definitely a score. And I'm like, for weaker teams in football, get it as far out as you can. At least your backs are in position. You know, you're set up to defend if you lose it. Like, is there a theory against Limerick? I know they have a big half back line. I know they're good in the air. But you get that ball as far as you can up the field. And don't, like, you know, we obviously analysed the way they demolished Cork and Cork learned a little bit from that. But is there an argument to say 70% of your puckers, just get them long and try and get it to the ground?
Well, I'd have been one watching the Cork game the other day. I actually had to watch it on replay. I missed it. But I watched it there the other night. I thought they learned an unbelievable amount from that first game. You have to vary it. Now, that's the one thing. You have to vary it because if you don't, Limerick are going to read it too well and they're going to have enough bodies there, and unfortunately they're bigger than most other teams and skillful. So right, okay, if they know where it's going, you're in trouble. But I thought they veered it very well. They went to the full back line, but the full back line didn't try and do too much with it for Cork. They brought their men back and they might have had a pass or two, but they tried to get it up the pitch again, unlike that first day in the league when they were swallowed up. They went to midfield. They did what I was trying to tell him, but what I was advocating for on this show last week, which was if you're hitting it long, at least hit it into the space Even if it's not onto the grass, into space where you can't have Kyle Hayes just taking three or four steps of a run up and jumping to catch it. The only ball caught clean, I think, was Dermot Burns caught one on Cahalan in the first half. And that was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, and Harnady
just climbed up over.
Yeah, Harnady caught a couple, didn't he?
Harnady caught a couple because they weren't allowing Limerick to stand under it.
Yeah.
So they had lads running left, running right. Now, not too far, because Limerick was still pretty zonal, but they were pucking into little pockets of space. And they were, and what Cork were doing a few times, they got the bunches of the twos and the threes. So they had maybe two or three, two going up for it and one down to pick up the break. So I actually think they did really well for an awful lot of those puck outs. And if I was actually, if I was a Cork person, this would probably be the most enthused I was with the Cork senior team in a number of years.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they were good. And the times they went to the cornerback is when there was no pressure on them. And that was a result of them going long. So Limerick, it wasn't as obvious, you know, as it kind of had been. So you can forgive that. My idea is going short to a fella. You know, Enna Murphy's jumping into my head. Like, and Limerick have a zone on it. And he looks one way, he looks another way. Or, you know, I've seen Stephen O'Keefe doing it. Anthony Nash in with Cork. And he put one out over the sideline in Croke Park and the whole crowd cheered, you know. Desperate for this one to the half back liner, get the thing long if there's nothing on. It's all you're doing is spreading panic throughout your team. Get it as long as you can, and the crowd won't cheer that you've put one over the line or that it's gone wrong or that you've, you know, there's a time to go short for me, and that's a time when a man's completely unmarked.
Yeah, and even, do you know what they did the last day, what I thought was really good? They would give it to the cornerback. Cornerback turns and he goes, oh, there's two or three lads that are about to close me down. So they actually switch it to the far corner back or give it back to the keeper who sends it across. Like you'd see in soccer, who switch it from one full back to the goalie to the far full back. Because Limerick shuttle across, and Kilkenny used to do that great as well. They just shuttle, everyone comes across. And actually the far side of the field is probably left unattended a lot of the time. And I think Cork did that very, very well the last day. As you said then, it resulted them in Limerick saying, right, okay, we have to back up a little bit. They knew that they hadn't the proper swarm on that they had other days. And of course, Cork had a few turned over, but I think you can't play this game and get every one of them right. But they did enough to unsettle them. And I don't think I've seen the Limerick backline less dominant from that primary possession as they were the other day.
Yeah, that's a good point though. And that, like, I mean, that's really good pressure. And you wonder sometimes how Kilkenny can have so many lads around the ball and stuff. There are fellas free the other side because say a wing back gets it, his man's marking him. The centre forward will go over and double up, and then the wing forward on the other side will come into centre forward. So there is a wing back on the other side free. It's just how do you get it over there? Because they're, you know, they've all moved across. That's what Liverpool. That's all the good press and soccer teams do that as well, don't they?
Blitz,
they drift.
Yeah, absolutely, absolute yeah. Blitz. And as you, and then what we're saying then is the crowd are back, so it's harder again if you're the team trying to avoid this blitz, because all of a sudden I can't hear my keeper telling me, calm down, relax, I'm here for you, baby. You know, you can't. Like, so you're kind of hoping to God you can see over these massive Limerick or Kilkenny lads and be able to pop a ball.
Because it's a dangerous ball. Yeah, it's a dangerous ball going across, you see. And unless you're Paddy Deegan, well, he learnt his lesson, I suppose, trying to give a ball,
exactly.
You know, like gave away the penalty from that ball. But I was looking at Davey talking about Cody, and it's funny the analysis of managers can change based on a big game. And look, I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. Everybody is. It's just, you know, like, for example, Brian Cody does question marks. Now, I'm not sure this was right, but we had a chat about it in January on the show here about, you know, there's pressure coming on him. You know, there was an article in The Examiner saying they're claiming to have inside information on an unhappy camp and, you know, joyless and all these kind of things. And then, you know, you go out and see Kilkenny against Wexford. Like, I mean, and none of that was evident. Like, I mean, Jesus, this was a team playing for their manager and playing for Kilkenny like never before. So, like Davey was saying, people said to me, Brian Cody's time in Kilkenny is up and we need some fresh blood. The biggest load of rubbish I've ever heard in my life. If Kilkenny people are thinking that, they need to have another look at themselves. And I suppose after a win like that, now look, they could lose again after this, but so we could change our minds again. Who knows? Maybe we're being very reactive after every game, but like it looks like a very happy camp based off that game.
Well, that's it. I mean, talk is cheap, really, and what players say to the media and how happy they are and how unhappy they are, it's all talk is cheap. You only see by the actions on the field, and never was there a ball let go, never was there a lost cause that wasn't gone after. So I always have maintained, I think Brian Cody is getting the most out of the set of players that he has now. And I think he's starting to build up a panel again. You had Wally Walsh coming on the other day, and I was saying to myself, how are Kilkenny going into a match without Wally Walsh? Because obviously we've all seen him at close quarters. Saying, you know, how he should be on the team. And geez, Killian Buckley, have they really enough to leave off his experience? But they had, and of course Wally Walsh came on and did what he did. But he's getting the most out of him. As I said, he's building that panel back up again, but they have the same work rate as old. I think it took a couple of years of tough love probably and kind of maybe showing that how hard you actually have to work. And now they seem to have that spirit again. So I think he's doing exactly what he needs to do with that bunch. Now, TJ Reid is obviously, did somebody say he's nearly 34 now?
Yeah.
And like, that's unbelievable fitness. He was still swanning around an extra time. So, but obviously, who knows how long TJ Reid has left, and he will leave a vacuum of quality there that I don't think they have to replace yet. But no, he's getting the most out of him. Look, people, it's a special, I don't know if it's a special GA or Irish, but they want change. And it's like I often say when people say a certain young tip player, jeez, he's not any good and he might have played two or three championship games. They don't want to give anybody a chance or anything a chance. It's either you're brilliant or you're terrible.
Yeah.
And that's, I think we have a culture of that in GA.
Yeah, no, I think we do. Like even another thing in Brian Cody's favour, even the subs, the established subs, all came on and had no egos, no attitudes. They came on and played. Like, that's another big sign. You know, like Wally Walsh could have had a face on him or Killian Buckley. Mm. Now, you know, maybe not a face on them, but the impact they made. And that's a big thing, to keep big name subs happy. He's able to do that as well.
Well, I'd say it's fair, and I think from back down the years, those two chaps, you know, Wally Walsh got his chance in the 2012 All-Ireland final, and he hadn't played a minute for Kilkenny before that, ever,
yeah.
Maybe?
Well, so was, yeah,
All-Ireland. So what goes around comes around, I suppose, in terms of some established name was left off for him back then, and I think they realised that. But I would say, like most good teams, your culture is built on performance and what you've done in recent times. And I suppose those that probably haven't lived up to their high standards over the last year and they're in the firing line. But no, they came on with A1 attitude. And thing is, I'd say Wally Walsh could have nearly earned himself a start for the Leinster final.
Yeah, no, it looks that way. Matty Kenny redeemed too. He's another manager. Imagine, like, I mean, dead man walking coming up to this match. Like, I mean, I've been given out about him for a year. You've only kind of, you know, been accepting it kind of this year. And like, he's, Jesus, their performance again. Playing, looked like a team playing for their manager, you know, no downing twos. Even when Conor Whelan got that goal, you think, no, there's only two in it now, here we go. No, absolutely not. It didn't go anywhere like you might have thought.
I couldn't really believe it, to be honest. Now, I thought, like, I did think Galway were exceptionally flat, and even missing those scores early on, like, tension can really breed into it then now. But that aside, it doesn't really matter. Dublin dominated them really in the physical exchanges. The big thing I thought about Dublin is they knew their style more than they had in the other matches. I thought against Antrim, I came on this and I said, yeah, I think that was a way better shove on than what they did. Sutcliffe was hurling at the elite level that he's capable of. And that continued into the last match. We said here, Jesse won't catch the balls he did the last day. We said he'll be on Padraig Mannion. He hit Padraig Mannion without salt. Now, in fairness, he gave him. I've never seen Padraig Mannion maybe since he had to mark Callanan in a few years ago when Callanan got the hat trick, getting such a tough day at the office. So he was in trouble. Chris Crummie then, again, hands up. I said, no, they need him in the half back line. And the reason it worked is their half back line was good anyway without him.
Yeah.
So he was literally everywhere. He was just this bullock running, covering every blade of grass. I'd like to go back and see his stats of how many turnovers or even slowing down possessions he got, because he was some leader up the field. And look, you do. There's no way around it. You need somebody up in the forward line who's going to carry the game for Galway, which he did now. But there were exceptions. Donald Burke, even. To me, I think he's a very good player, but I think he really stepped it up. And he's like a kind of younger Noel McGrath, in that he gets the ball, he picks the right option, he knows where to twist, and of course he's very, very accurate. So, no, kudos to him, and I suppose apologies to Matty Kenny, is it?
Oh, definitely apologies to Matty Kenny. Quick one here, actually. Donal O'Cusack on the Sunday game said that Ronan Hayes, he showed, you know, that the eye analysis, I always laugh when I see that, it's like a computer game, as if you can't say, look, Ronan Hayes is looking here, you actually have to do the laser thing to actually, you know, give you a visual of that, the fact he's looking. Like, I mean, just saying it isn't enough. Do you, like, he seemed to be out there already. It's not like he went, I don't know, maybe the camera didn't pick him going out, but he was looking around to maybe see Crummie coming on a charge. I'm not sure what to think, whether, I was hoping Connell would be here today to say, is that something Dublin might have worked on?
Well, do you know what I felt about it now at the time? I didn't look at Don Log Cusack's analysis of it. I just felt that was the first time they really won a ball in that position. You know, when you're inside the 21, but you're either side of the 14.
Yeah.
That position, I think it's the first time that happened. The Galway backs had played all their hurling out the field, outside the 21. There was no deep runner, really. I thought it was the first time that Crummy or Sutcliffe actually got through the middle and gambled and went. Yeah. And they completely switched off. And look, come here, to me, you get the ball in that situation. If you're not looking across the goals, then you're not an intercounty hurler, like, you know. So he did, and it was a great ball across, but he, geez, if he had not seen him and just shot for a pint, I'd be saying that's some of the worst forward play you can do.
Right, okay, but it was a sensational ball. So maybe, for example, Donald Brooks, centre forward, drift to the side and stick one across. So maybe I'm falling down on the thinking, Ronan Hayes, you clear the fullback out of there. I'm starting to think maybe this was something that they might have discussed.
Maybe they were discussed. Well, look, if you think back on Matty Kenny when he was with Coola, he had Conor Callaghan playing in the 14, but he, I would say, never received a ball in the 14.
Yeah.
So it was always to the right or the left. I saw an awful lot of them play that time, and it was always out to the side. And of course, if you can pull the full back out of there and you have strong athletes coming through the centre, then you are going to cause a lot of hassle. And of course, Ronan Hayes always gives the danger that he'll take you on. So you can't actually sit too far back off him.
You have to follow him.
Powerful.
Yeah.
You have to go with him. He's powerful. If he gets around you, you're in trouble. So yeah, but it was funny. It was the first time they actually got into that position. And, you know, it was probably, you know, without that goal, might have been an awful lot closer at the end.
Yeah, it was a brilliant, brilliant goal. Another manager then that we, well, again, here's this common denominator here is me. I was talking up Shane O'Neill. I was comparing him to Jim Gavin last Thursday. And now, after a terrible loss, and then I was reading like his championship record, played 5, lost 3, won 2. Now he's lost against Kilkenny going in as favourites. He's lost against Dublin. No shame in losing to Limerick. They played well. And now I'm starting to doubt Shane O'Neill after one loss. What's going on here, Paddy?
It's all over now for him. So where he was kind of humble and he was
kind of yeah, like a secret assassin.
I know. Now he's uninspiring. To agree with that. I think they'll just be so disappointed with how they played. Like, it was just, now they hit a lot of wides, which says to you they had a lot of chances as well. You know, they had a lot of chances. Yeah. So there's no getting away from that. So it should have been a very close match. But regardless, did they play well? No, I'd say they'd be ultra disappointed with some of the players. Like, you know, I mean, Padraig Mannion, I've already said it, and it's only because we hold him in such high esteem. He's a great player, didn't live up to his billing. Fintan Burke is a great young player, didn't hurl well at all, and maybe Whelan was one of the only guys in the forward line that carried the can for a team. Like Concannon, Jesus Christ, I'm sick of building him up on this show, and, you know, didn't get anywhere near a ball, which is, this is an awful lot for the Dublin backs and how brilliant they were. But yeah, that's disappointing. I suppose I wouldn't like to be the team to play him in the qualifiers next now. Well, shouldn't. Now, this is the real sign. If they have another bad performance, then I actually haven't a clue where they're going.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely. And is the Doughy Burke centre back thing, like, I mean, he's persisting with this. How did that go? Like, his distribution looks okay.
Distribution's fine. It's always going to be a kind of a medium to short distance distribution.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he wouldn't be the finest of strikers. Better than me now, but he wouldn't be the finest of strikers. Look, I still think Doughy Burke was fine. Garrow McInerney did fine for the most part. I don't think that was their problem, you see. So it's not going to, if you don't hit a 50-50 ball to Doughy Burke, like, that's when he's really at his best. Like, you see him marking Callan or whoever in the start of the edge of the square. He's coming out like a train and he's so physical and he's pretty quick, good in the air. So that's where he's going to start dominating. But Dublin didn't really let them do that. And especially when you're going man-marking or playing him out the field, well, then you're not going to just lure puckouts down at half a minute. And Dublin did a good job of that as well. They bunched in the middle, they broke to the side and they hit the space. And so you never saw the Galway backline really comfortable with what was going on in front of them.
Yeah. Is that why they've moved him out to centre-back? Because no one's poking ball on top of him anymore and he can't do that inspirational stuff. Like, if Tommy Doyle coming up on the show in part two, I'm going to ask him that question. He's in at full back and I'm sure he doesn't get the same opportunities to catch as before.
I'd say they don't. They certainly don't. And maybe they're, and looking at Dublin, like, I would say Shane O'Neill comes across as a manager who is going to look at the other team and see, okay, this is our best way of playing against them. So I'd say he probably felt that Rob McInerney would be fine inside when the ball wasn't going to be going in. That was going to be more short around the half-back line. And Dahi Burke is a centre-back. But he's played there before. I actually think Dahi Burke doesn't look like the same player he did a couple of years ago. That's not to say I don't still think he's really, really good. I don't think he's the same phenom that he was in terms of literally throwing guys out of the way, getting the ball up, throwing another lad out of the way and setting the whole team up. He's played a lot of years running football.
He did well on Callanan last year, though, didn't he, in the Gaelic rounds?
Yeah, he 100% did.
But that was
again,
a fullback.
Shamey's
yeah.
probably not, and he's fullback, his more natural position. But I just still don't think, I still think even the Leinster final last year, the All-Ireland semi-final, in some times I've said, geez, he's hanging in well there. Whereas before it was the guy he's isn't even getting near the ball. Whereas now he's kind of making last ditch flicks away and stuff like that. But I just see that I don't think he's the same phenomenon. Like, what was he, 3 or 4 All-Stars in a row? Like, you know, unbelievable. That sometimes, you know, you've played so much hurling that you just mightn't be at that level that you are.
Well, like, I mean, he obviously would struggle against Limerick because they never give you a 50-50 ball, and he thrives on 50-50 ball. That's what, he's an animal. Like, that's what he wins. That's the brilliance of him, and that's what gets the crowd going. When that's taken out, and now it's been given the advantage of the forward, you know, like, I mean, it's not easy mark forwards with space that are getting good ball for anyone.
It's horrible, yeah. I mean, it's. I actually think Cork did very well the last day in terms of, like, usually your half-back line just sits. I thought they man-marked in a way, or certainly kept the, really close
the wing back stage,
sitting back. Yeah, and even I know King Lynch got on ball, but there was a good few times he would have gotten more ball, and Coleman was up his backside and showed a lot more grit than he'd usually show as a hurler. He's more classy. But I think, yeah, Dahi Burke, if they were to play Limerick, maybe it would suit him because he'd be on one of those big wing, maybe they put him wing back and put him on one of those big boys, and then, you know, they're always going to get a certain amount of high balls out. So I think that actually probably wouldn't be the worst case scenario for them.
Yeah, maybe under a puck out. Come here, there's one big game. There was the big game of the weekend. There's plenty of big games for everybody. There's Joe McTonagh Cup, and there's Christy Ring, and there's Laurie Marr, and all sorts of games. But the big one this weekend is Antrim and Laois. It's in Parnell Park. This is a ticket into the qualifiers to play Wexford, Cork, Galway, Waterford, a big glamour game. Or it's Joe McDonagh Cup, because it's doubling up on a Joe McDonagh Cup relegation match. Like, Paddy, I'm like, my heart would be broken genuinely for either of these two teams to have their arses landed back into Joe McDonagh after sampling the big stage, Laois having gotten to an All-Ireland quarter final, Antrim after having a good league. I would feel less sorry for Antrim, if I'm being honest. And that's even if I'm trying to pretend to be neutral, because they've only come up. But Laois's progression would be gone out the window.
It would. You'd wonder, sure, look, you have to have your structures and all that in place and how many is in it. But you'd nearly love to see that if a team was competing at the Liam McCarthy, that there's some sort of dispensation put in and say, right, okay, you're keeping within X amount of scores of teams. You're obviously competing well. We keep you there. And now let's try and get another team up competing again. But it is disappointing to see him go, because I know it used to be like, if you're playing Laois or you're playing Antrim, it was like, okay, how much are we going to beat them by? But now I think you actually have to plan to play these players, and they're getting a kind of a profile themselves. Like, I'm getting to know the Antrim lads, whereas I didn't, you know, honest. I wasn't watching the lower level matches before, and I can appreciate a lot of the skill they have. And I think I feel sorry for them, because they really underperformed the other week against Dublin. Like, I really think there's a lot more in that team. But we will see. Like, Laois, it's difficult. They've been here before. I think they're trying to it's not a rebuild, because you had some good stuff with Eddie Brennan, but like, a new manager comes in, Cheddar is probably going back to some old lads he used to use and going back to an old style, whereas the players were playing for Eddie Brennan last year in a fairly successful style of play. So that's probably tough to get back to 11 playing field. But I think it's harsh on both of them. I think it's important for Antrim, though, being totally honest, really important, because they're trying to get up to a level, whereas Laois are kind of bobbing away at a similar level for the last few years. So I'd love to see Antrim being able to see what it's like.
I don't know. I think the relegation thing is a little bit cruel for the progression, because you're not going, how is Laois or Antrim going to progress by going down and winning a competition that they won pretty easily? Let's be honest. Now, obviously you don't want to shut the door on a Westmeath to come up into Leinster. It's hard to know what the answer to this is. Like, Leinster have, in fairness to the GAA, they've already increased the teams in Leinster Championship from 5 to 6. And in their defence, both Laois and Antrim were absolutely hammered out the gate. Now, you know, they seem to be freaky results. You think they're a bit better than that. It's hard to know what the solution is, though, but it's not going to help Antrim or Laois to go backwards now. It's not in any way.
No, I don't think so. I think it'd have to be maybe a little bit more fluid. Maybe if you get up, that you get a minimum of 2 years up. I don't know. That's possibly a reach, you know. But at least it gives you that first year to be say, oh, that's the level, right? Okay, I can see what the level of fitness that guy was, the tactical, how why it's important, you know, what Cheddar or Darren Gleeson are saying to me about this tiny, minuscule tactical change that he wants me to make to my game. And until you get punished by that at a higher level, some people won't take it on board. Like, they don't. Like, they won't take that on. So I think they've done well to kind of make the Joe McDonagh and Christy Ring and that, you know, to try and make competitive groups. But maybe just probably needs to be looked at again to see how can we bring those middle teams right up to the top. Because I don't think the Laois and the Antrim are too far away from being very competitive. But how do we push it on that extra bit?
Yeah. And like, I mean, I'd even say this to Tommy Doyle next. The other side of this is that if a Laois or an Antrim doesn't go down and make the Joe McDonagh Cup competitive, how are those teams going to progress? Because I see since they've gone to six and both Antrim and Laois are in the Leinster Championship, you look at the Joe McDonagh Cup groups and it doesn't have the same, I don't know, I don't seem to have the same interest in it as I maybe would have.
I wonder about the leagues. Like when I started playing, it was about 06, 07, 08. You'd always play a couple of teams that were, you know, below the level of the top guys. So you'd have bigger groups. You could have two groups, but the bottom two or three teams would be, you know, of a lower standard. So even if you had that, where they were getting that competitive action, and actually what happens is the top teams get a good chance to try out young players as well. So it's that type of mechanism. And so everyone's kind of winning that way. I used to really like that way. I got my chance against Laois. My first start in a league was against Laois and did fine. And it was a good match. Like, so I'd wonder about something like that. And maybe for the championship, then you have to earn where you're going, but you still have to get that experience against the good teams. And just playing Tip or whoever, Limerick in a challenge match, that's not really a true reflection of competitive action.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not. Listen, there's no easy solution to this. There's definitely not. It's something you'd have sympathy for the GAA on. How do you see this going, Paddy? Like, it's a 50-50 game, really. Is it like there was four in it up in Antrim in the league? And that's not a league game involving Tip or whoever who mightn't really care. This was a game both teams wanted to win. So I don't know if that's any indication. They're both coming off terrible losses. 50-50?
50-50 match, definitely, because you back Antrim to win, and if Laois beat him, you say, well, of course, they have lads playing at that higher level for the last few years and have actually got to an All-Ireland quarter-final, of course they win. Whereas I would have liked a lot of what I saw with Antrim in the league, whereas I saw Laois a couple of times, and I didn't think they were a set-up, I didn't think they were as motivated hurling as well. So just based on that, I'll probably say Antrim, but very hard to pick between them, but Antrim really underperformed for me the last day in terms of the Paddy Burke centre back didn't play like he did, knocked in midfield, didn't play like he had before. McManus didn't have an influence at all the last day, didn't work for Kieran Clarke up front. So I'm just basing on that they didn't hurl at all. Now maybe they weren't let hurl, Dublin were very good in the day. But I'd say there could be a kick in him this weekend. And look, I think Darren would be good to pick a team up as well. So I'll just say Antrim.
I think you're thinking of Naughton. I think...
Did I say Mac Naughton?
No, McManus scored six from playoff off Liam Rush. So he was one of the few that did play well.
Oh, sorry.
Naughton was the kind of disappointment a little bit, I think, in midfield. Because he had Naughton played centre forward or midfield. But he was midfield the last day. And McManus was on Liam Rush and got six from play. They're the big ones. The Antrim midfield and McManus, for me, they're the big dangers that Laois need to tie up. So whatever they can do to stop them, obviously Clarke is very good up front as well. Right, Paddy, we'll leave it there. That's all we've time for. We're going to come back here with Tommy Doyle next. All right, so Westmeath and Joe McDonagh Cup action this weekend against Kildare, and Tommy Doyle joins us on the show. How's it going, Tommy?
Good, not a bother. Now, looking forward to the weekend. Tough game last week against Carlow. and Kildare this weekend coming. So looking forward to it. Hopefully come out the right side of it, but same for Kildare, would be hoping the same.
Yeah, exactly. Come here. So you drive a hard bargain here to get yourself on the show. You have a club draw that you made sure that gets mentioned.
Yeah, so look, I'm doing a good bit of work myself. I'm part of it. So it's a kitchen raffle draw for a kitchen that's worth up to 30,000 in value. It's an association with Derivar Design and 92 North, who are two local companies. The Peter Collins, the guy that runs it, is a club member of ours. So we're running a raffle for it's a brand new in-frame bespoke design kitchen, whatever you want, furniture included. Up to 30,000, so it's a great prize, and tickets are €20. So, if anyone would be obliging, you can buy tickets on our website, which is www.win30kkitchen.ie.
Very, very good. What are you going to buy with the money?
So Loughlin Gael is my club, so we're developing the facility and the grounds. We put in a new training pitch in the last couple of years, and just work on the grounds. Very good underage coming up at the minute, and hoping to just give the facilities there for the many members involved. So been a good bit of work. We ran an Oscars fundraiser a few years ago, which was a great bit of crack that got the kind of development going. So we're hoping to finish off a few things, and hopefully this raffle will help best we can.
Very good, very good. I judged one of those Oscars things before. I was very, 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 very strict judge altogether, but they are good crack, and they're definitely good at raising money. Come here, how's confidence going into Saturday, Tommy? Because, like, I mean, I always get interested about this. You're coming out of a bloody desperately hard division. You know, you had a great result against Waterford. You know, the other results probably didn't go that well. Like, are you coming in, like, can you be confident after losing every game? Or how do you kind of discuss this as a panel?
Yeah, so, like a lot of people are saying, I had a couple of phone calls after games, and to be honest, I felt like people are having a bit of sympathy for us. But look, the mood in the camp has been good all year, and we've done a good bit of work during the pandemic with a guy called Declan Coyle. He's the author of the Green Platform. And it's kind of up to ourselves to make a choice. Look, we want to be in Division One. We're delighted to be there and playing those top teams. And like, you wouldn't have noticed, probably if you went down the train the Tuesday after some of these tough games, you wouldn't notice that we were beaten at the weekend. Cork was probably our toughest beating. I think we conceded 7 or 8 goals in that. But if you came down to Tuesday for training, everyone was mad to go again and look forward to next week. So it was great to have games week on week. We probably hadn't time to dwell and worry about what happened last day. We're just looking forward to next day. So it's been good in that aspect, playing against the top, playing in high intensity games, and hopefully being able to bring that back to Joe McDonough. So look, we've enjoyed our time there. We still have one game to go to play Laois. And look, if we win that, we stay up. And that's our plan, hopefully.
Well, that's it. And I think, isn't that game before an Ireland semi-final or something? So that'll be a nice experience. Is that relegation match going to be before one of the Ireland semi-finals, am I right in saying?
There is a preliminary, I think, fixture for that. Not too sure. It'll probably depend on how we go on Joe McDonough. So and how Laois go next weekend against Antrim. So we'll see what's to come.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, you're going back to, in a way, it's a big advantage that you're in Joe McDonough. The sooner you get out of it, the better. I'm sure you're saying, like, you're stuck in it for 3 years. You lost the first two finals, you know, and then last year didn't go so well. I'll get into that with you in a minute. Like, I mean, after playing at that higher level, surely when you go back to Joe McDonough, you know, you'd be hoping that your speed, you know, your speed of thought and your touch and all these things will be at a really good level.
Yeah, well, that's it. You're trying to take the best things from it. And I think the big thing is just to have that mental strength throughout it. I think we've shown it so far. The season is long, but I think we have kept our heads throughout, and we've performed in games, and sometimes we haven't. So we felt we've built on every game. Maybe the first game against Galway, we had 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and we started to struggle, and we probably extended that period of how well we were going in games till the Limerick game, I think, when we went 50 minutes that we were well in the game. So look, we'd be hoping to bring that into Joe McDonough. We obviously did. Carlow gave us a tough battle last weekend, and we struggled at times in that, but that is what you're aiming for, bringing that intensity, bringing that high high level of skill into Joe McDonagh, and we're probably in a good position that we do get the advantage of that, and we probably aren't facing into that Leinster Championship that Laois and Antrim have had. But look, we want to get there, and I think getting exposure to these games is the best way to learn.
I don't know. I was talking to Paddy Stapleton about this just before, or in part one, and we're talking about the Joe McDonagh Cup. I don't know about you, but did it feel like there was more interest in it nationally a couple of years ago? Like, did losing a good team out of it, you know, to put six in Leinster and five down into the Joe McDonagh Cup, is this just me, or have you noticed that yourself?
Probably have noticed a small bit. Just I think the teams were so close to each other at that time. Now, Laois and Antrim have kicked on a bit. Mead down are finding their way there this year.
Yeah.
And Mead were there last year as well, but they're finding their feet in that. We were probably there a couple of years ago ourselves, in finding ourselves in Joe McDonagh. So just, I think when it was five teams, they were so close together. Maybe things have changed, but that's the way championships, that's the way structures change. Look, we're still in the Joe McDonagh. We haven't got out of it. We haven't deserved to get out of it at the minute. And until we win that, we won't. So hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, what happened last year? So you were flying it before the... Well, I won't say flying it. You're in that horrible Division 1, but you beat Carlow fairly well then in the relegation match to stay in Division 1. And I remember having Shane O'Brien on the show and talking to him, you know, things are going great. Then the pandemic happened and you came back from the lockdown and you lost your first two Joe McDonagh Cup games really badly, at home to Kerry and beaten well by Antrim, and that your Joe McDonagh was gone before it even started.
Yeah, look, it was like a game of two halves, to be honest, last year. So that the big gap in the middle of the pandemic probably didn't suit us. We had some good performances in the league and ran some teams close and that, yeah. And just having that big gap over the summer, a lot of lads went back to their clubs. We have a very competitive club championship here. And to be honest, when I was going back in October, November to train, I found it very difficult going back to play County Hurling after being beaten in a club semi-final with my own club.
Right.
A week later, being called into training, and it just was a long year and all, and it probably drained a lot of players. And look, Antrim were the better team throughout the competition and deserved their to win McDonagh, and we had no answer for them then. But we've been conscious of that this year, just to find that kind of mental strength. We've done a lot of work over Zoom calls and talking things out that we probably didn't do over the last summer. We probably relied a lot on doing a lot of training and stuff by ourselves, and it broke lads down. And then, as I mentioned before, the club championship was just disappointing for a lot of lads. And going back a week later after that is very hard to play with lads that they've just beaten you on the pitch. So did find it difficult, but we probably got what we deserved.
So you kind of lost that bond together, the closeness, the interaction with each other, and then became rivals rather than teammates.
That's probably it. And look, we're not the only county that had the same structures, but I just felt we did find it very hard. Me personally, I love going back to play county, but it was probably one of the first years realising such a break off, such enjoyment with my own club back playing, being there for the very first training session of the year and having 30 or 40 lads down,
yeah,
in the club hasn't been seen for us for a long time. So it was just so enjoyable, and then just when it ended so quickly, was so difficult. And then just getting a call, then we're county training on Tuesday or Thursday, and just being deflated. But look, that's the way it is. It we couldn't do anything about a pandemic. We tried our best to keep things ticking over the summer, and probably went overdrive, and we didn't last the pace till November.
Yeah, come here. You're a big traditional fullback. How are you finding the way the game is changing now? So we were talking about Dahi Burke in part one, and you know, 50-50 balls were his forte, and you know, they're your forte as well. Like, I mean, are you getting as many catches in a game, or how are you adapting to that?
It is difficult. The new rules aren't helping out the defenders in any way, and the way hurling has changed, I haven't caught many balls in many games now. I've dropped a few, all right, but you don't get the exposure of that long ball as much. Teams are a lot cleverer. they're finding ways to break down defenses, and it's some parts of it have become a possession game, and probably afraid to hit that ball straight into the full forward line. So look, there is changes in every, and it changes from week to week on how teams prepare. It has, as mentioned before, it has been difficult for defenders. Forwards are so, I think it's gone so physical, and in regard to speed, players are so balanced now, and if you touch a man now at full speed, you're probably going to foul him. So it has become as difficult as ever to turn the ball over. So you've probably got to win it out in front, but when the ball coming in is more possession based, you don't get those 50-50 battles as much as maybe 2-3 years ago.
Yeah, at that point, you've noticed the drying up pretty much in the last few years.
Well, I don't know if it's just me. Maybe teams are getting to know that. No, my strength is probably my height and size, so I don't get too many of them handy floating balls in as much as so. Look, that's it. You just have to adapt your own game to it, and probably take the credit that you're probably getting respected by your opponents, that teams are trying to play around you. So you just try to adjust yourself and hopefully do the best you can do for your team. It's not just about your individual performance. So just try to help the team the best you can if you can't get into the game.
I think Brian Corcoran, I did a tribute show with him over the lockdown, and he said that when he came back in 2003, he said, "I'm not playing centre-back. They don't puck the ball to me at centre-back anymore." So he's in playing club games and he's completely out of the game. So he wanted to go to full forward just to be able to catch a few balls.
Well, that's it, exactly. That's it, exactly. You want to be where the ball's going to land, and it does change from game to game. And even... Look, I know one of the lads I used to look up to in my own club, Chris DeMurta, said games have changed, and he went back playing junior hurling sometimes, and just it's some difference with just the way the ball comes in, and you just have to readjust yourself to it, and that's just in club level. So of course, County's going to go to another extreme.
Yeah, well, at club level, they still let the ball go do the work because they're not fit enough for this running game. I saw on your Wikipedia you've scored 1-1. Maybe there's a potential for a full forward slot sometime in the future.
Yeah, I think I got that. I think I got that on my debut, actually.
So really?
I was roaming up the field from wing back. But look, I played forward with my club many a time as probably that defensive forward you mentioned. A lot of lads been talking about, so it's I might call on that at some stage. Look, the forwards get the glory a lot, so it'd be enjoyable to play a few games there. But look, enjoying hurling at the minute. I've kind of changed myself out to centre back in the last couple of games, so a bit of freedom there as well. So you probably head in that direction. From full back to full forward, hopefully.
Yeah, you're heading up that way. Cheddar Plunkett, I don't know if you listen to the show, he often raves about you. He's a big fan of yours. He described you on the show as the best full back in the country at one point. And I think it wasn't not long after your performance against Shamey Callanan, I think it was 2017, where you played him down Turles. Westmead were brilliant that day. And, you know, I think Tipperary got a few scores towards the end. I think they won by 9 in the end. But Shamey Callanan got 0 from play and he was taken off. So, like, I mean, I remember you got a good bit of national exposure after that. Like, did you notice the difference in playing well in a big game against a big team, you know, compared to obviously at the Joe McDonagh Cup level?
Yeah, look, it's every game you have a new challenge. And look, that probably hasn't helped me, Cheddar, talking so much about that because teams are realising that you don't hit the ball into me. So, you do get caught out on that. But look, Joe McDonagh has a challenge as well. The level of hurlers at the minute in the competition, the likes of Shane Conway, Mikey Boyle from Kerry, Conor McCann was probably one of my toughest games last year with Antrim, and you think he went on to win Joe McDonagh Player of the Year. So there's challenges in every corner hurling, and look, you're finding those battles just as much in the Joe McDonagh. So they're the ones you relish, and hopefully coming out on top more often in the future, please God.
What do you make of this new penalty rule?
Look, I kind of mentioned earlier, it's difficult for a defender, but when the game's just gone so high pace, what do you do? Do you let someone kind of walk through for the goal? Look, there probably has been an issue over the past year or that, and look, we've used it as well of being cynical. We've probably been criticised for not being cynical enough and probably trying to play the ball too much. So they've had to change it in some way to help the forwards. But look, it's when the rule is probably implemented in a bit too much of a strict fashion, as you've probably seen at the weekend.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. Like it's like your job is to defend the goal, and if you have to run alongside someone and just wait for the ball to pop out, it's so hard. So the guys seen it at the weekend how difficult it is.
Is it in your mind, or are you still just going out playing the way you always did, and you know you're hoping something like that doesn't come up? Or if you're tackling a man, like would it be going through your mind during a game? Here, Jesus, I'm inside the 21 now, you know.
Being honest, it hadn't until last weekend. No. I was probably caught for a foul running back, and I just heard someone mentioned black card, and I was like, oh. And it was only in that moment I was like, geez, I could be in a bit of trouble here. But it's probably going to be more and more on your mind now, seeing what's happened over the weekend. And look, these things can happen all in kind of all rounds of hurling, and it was probably amplified last weekend in such a high caliber game. And you just have to have it. You have to have it some way on your mind, and it came to the fore last weekend for me, really.
Yeah, no, I think that's going to be in everybody's minds after last weekend, especially where the foul was committed, or maybe because there's such controversy about last weekend that we never see that again. You might hope it's the latter.
Well, hopefully, it's just look. Hoping on some kind of common sense level that the rules aren't implemented as strictly as maybe last weekend. We've probably seen in the first couple of rounds of the league, there was a lot about kind of handy frees and the amount of frees in games. And it kind of tailored off after that. So hopefully that's what will happen, and it will be implemented a lot better for what it is as when it's a clear as day, probably. Opportunity.
I think I'm going to let you go, Tommy, because I know you're under pressure. Obviously, the game against Kildare this weekend, I'm not going to ask you about that because it's not fair asking questions on the Thursday before a game. But the Joe McDonagh Cup final last year was on the television. The 2 years you played on it, it was clashing with the Munster. So that's an important improvement they've made on it.
It doesn't, to me, look, from my opinion is, look, it doesn't really matter to me on TV coverage. I hopefully anyone that is close to me and cares about Westmeath hurling is going to be in Croke Park if we get to a Joe McDonagh final. So, look, I don't think it worries too much on players that are going to play in the game. Obviously, it'd be nice to see it on television, on the highlights, when you get to those games. But, look, the atmosphere in Croke Park on the 2 days we did play there was massive, coming in with a Leinster crowd of Kilkenny and Wexford coming into the ground near the end. Now, look, we didn't get out on top at that stage, but you're getting the exposure to those kind of hurling fans as well. And being in Croke Park, every player's kind of dream when they are a kid. So not much of complaints about the TV coverage. Look, the TV are going to do what they like, but players just want to play in Croke Park and play in front of those crowds.
Yeah, exactly. Well, come here, I won't keep you any longer, Tommy. Best of luck against Kildare at the weekend, and hopefully we'll see you back in Croke Park for the final.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Great stuff from Tommy Doyle there. We'll be back on probably next Thursday because there's no matches on television this weekend, so we won't be doing a show on Monday. We'll be back next Thursday and we'll preview the weekend's action then. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do?
No, we don't.
A donkey eat and a donkey eat a pallet. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.